Okay, so we've just moved down a little bit now. So we were talking about the Poblenou and the recent urban regeneration, as it might be called, in one way, our destruction of community in another way. Can you just tell us a little bit more, because a lot has happened here recently.
So Poblenou, which was the old industrial neighborhood of Barcelona, with, you know, with all the families living in it, the artists that were moving in, built studios here. Macabra, which was this amazing squatted social center that was just evicted a couple weeks ago. The city decided to convert it into a new neighborhood, which they decided to sell as the technological neighborhood of Barcelona. And this is sort of like their sales pitch is the neighborhood that was the industrial, that was where the industrial revolution happened in Barcelona, is now going to be where the digital revolution supposedly is going to happen in Barcelona. So they're building spaces where people can work and live who are in telecommunications, dot-com companies, as if that even still is going on. And that's sort of like how they're selling it. Like, it's like a lot more upscale. There's like a housing crisis in Barcelona, and most people can't even afford to move out of their parents' house. So, I mean, I don't think it's geared towards local population, this plan they have. But what they're doing is that they passed a city ordinance or clause which allows them to tear down any building below two stories high. So they're just gonna build very high in this neighborhood that's usually traditionally been built very low. Used to be like one story, two story buildings mostly, and that's what they're doing. They're tearing down. They have torn down already like blocks and blocks of this neighborhood, and constructed very very cheap, ugly high rises that supposedly are going to house telecommunications industries and the people who work in it, which it's not clear really if that's like a functioning business plan, because like so far, say one of the complexes that they built is still has a lot of apartments for sale. And we know that construction just in and of itself is like a big industry in Barcelona. So despite the fact that Barcelona has a minimum of 70,000 empty housing units just abandoned being speculated with, and a crazy housing shortage at the same time, they're constantly constructing and tearing down and constructing. So like really, that's the kind of economy that they're creating, this sort of unsustainable economy. Now, to support this project, they've created this 6 month long event called the Forum of the Cultures. It happened in 2004, and the Forum of the Culture had three axes, which were peace, sustainability, and multiculturalism. At the same time, it was funded by companies like Coca-Cola, Indra, Corte Inglés, all these countries who have been profiting from speculation, from the war in Iraq, the supposed reconstruction in Iraq, military industry like Indra and Corte Inglés, who are like have the military as some of their biggest clients. So, and these people are supporting this supposed cultural event. And what happened was they invited all social movements and NGOs and that kind of people to participate, and like pretty much were rejected across the board. Like no one participated. So it was like sort of like a shoddy cover up that they couldn't even make fly.
But with that, they used that as an excuse, like what they did, the Olympics, they had an excuse to knock and rebuild a huge amount for the World Fair, was it back in the 1800s or something?
Yeah.
Another, you know, a start. But they did rebuild a huge part of the city down at the Forum area, yes?
Right, yeah. That's part of the Barcelona model, is using these international macro events as excuses to give the city a push into a more upper scale, supposedly cleaner direction, less use of public space, more control, all that built into the architecture that they're building.
Yeah.
So that's what they did. They built like a whole area which was like a conference, a big conference hall. What is it called? Like a place to dock private yachts, like a sporting ship, marina for, but like for sporting boats. Like a whole, like the hugest plaza in the world or something like that, which is like all cement, with no shade. Just like this sort of public space that like never ever gets used by the public.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Purposefully, I think.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of like what the Ventidos Arroba is. Ventidos Arroba is, maybe I didn't mention that. Ventidos Arroba, which means 22 at, with the at symbol, is the name of this new neighborhood they're constructing in place of Poblenou.
Is it only Poblenou, or does it go out further to other areas?
It's pretty much Poblenou. It's sort of like the new name for Poblenou. And it's also the name of like a semi-private, semi-public association that is like running or planning the whole thing. So doing away with Can Ricard is part of their project.
Yeah.
Now, whatever, the struggle around Can Ricard is actually really complicated, and I don't think I can...
Well, just before that, though, can you just tell us a little bit about, like, with all these pushes by the government and by big money groups, basically, what sort of resistance has it met? Like, how much discussion was there with local communities? Was there any, or were they just token and not listened and just... Because as happens in many other places.
Yeah, Barcelona has a strategy of having sort of like a false participatory process, and at the same time they do this facts on the ground kind of politics. So they maybe would talk about the neighbors about maybe one corner, and then in front they would just like go in and construct without asking anyone.
Yeah.
So they sort of like, it's sort of like a distraction tactic, and they're. And they're famous for, like, since the 80s, they're famous for building what they call the hard plaza, which is like the cement, flat, unusable, unfriendly plaza, which is really not meant to, which looks maybe, supposedly looks good in photos, but is completely unusable in terms of public space.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a space you can pass through, but it's not a place you can stop and use. And that's what they've been promoting. Mostly in the central areas, they're like business areas.
Right.
I don't think they're promoting the same kind of urban design in the upper, more affluent neighborhoods of Barcelona. But what
happened? Like, because I was just reading there recently saying that, like, while it was under the fascist system, that the communities did organize, like, because they had to try to even just get a road fixed or something like that. So there was a history of quite a strong community organization and putting pressure on or requesting things be done. So did that keep on going, or has that been lost, or is there still strong community here?
It's slowly being lost, but to the 22 at plan, there was a huge resistance in Poblenou. If you would walk here maybe a year ago, there were so many banners against Ventidos Arroba, so many banners saying that Poblenou is not for sale. The mayor would come here to present something or other, and he would get booed and whistled. I mean, there was like a huge amount of resistance here against this plan. But now if you walk around, there's a lot less. You see like it's just like been implemented top down, despite the supposed participatory process. An emblematic, case is like the case of, I can't remember what the architect that made that big penis-shaped building.
Jean Nouvel.
Yeah. That guy is supposed to build also the park, which is supposed to go right next to Can Ricard. Now the neighbors have been reclaiming a park here for years, and the city has been like sort of you know, like saying yes and no and not really telling what they're going to do. And then finally, like, some group of people took over the, after the houses that were there were torn down, there was the empty lot, and people took it over and created a park. Because, okay, what the park the city wanted to create is was very, again, this type of public space supposed to be designed by the same architect that built the Torre Akbar, the penis-shaped lit-up building. And they wanted to call it Central Park, because that's the kind of like international image they wanted to give Poblenou, or Ventidos Arroba, as they now want to call it. And so the neighbors and these community groups took it over, and they decided to call it Parc Central Park, sort of like re-Catalanized the name of the park, and to symbolize the way that like they want to take the park in a different direction. But as if you walk through there now, you can see that it's already like a construction site. Yeah. And now this architect supposedly did have meeting with community groups, but it was very like one-sided communication. It was not a participatory project where he just sort of like surveyed maybe their opinions and then maybe took them into account into his creative process, which is very typical creative process where he's the genius that comes from the outside, and he can be inspired by all sorts of stuff. He can listen to community groups even if he wants to, and he can pay attention to them or not if he feels like it. But like people who participated said that it was basically a farce, that they didn't feel like they had a voice in these meetings.
So they feel like they're just being completely taken over and not listened to. Like, with that though, like, you know, they can be angry, but do they feel that they can't do anything about it? Or do they try to do any non-violent direct action? Or like you were saying they had banners out, you know. Like, what can people do in these situations if they just feel like they're being steamrolled over?
I think the only thing that seemed at all effective was these acts of civil disobedience. For instance, in Can Ricard, there was a building that was all artist studios, and it was being evicted. All the artists were being kicked out. So this other group of people who are dealing with technology in this sort of maybe creative way, people who are involved in free software, people who are making music digitally, and then some of the artists who were supposed to get kicked out took over the building and created the center of operations to try and change the situation of Can Ricard and give it visibility. And part of the stuff they were doing that they did was also try and create a model of what a participatory democratic technological neighborhood can look like. So they were working on projects like providing free wireless internet access to all of Poblenou. They were using cameras to document and to alert different things that were happening in Can Ricard in terms of like acts of vandalism from the owners that were trying to kick people out, what they call in Barcelona real estate mobbing. So there was all this, and they were like giving a lot of visibility to this. So they were holding public events here, workshops. They created a mobile unit that visited all these different spots in Barcelona, and with a video projection and a sculptural exhibition and like a photographic exhibition of stuff going on in Poblenou. So like they gave a lot of visibility to the struggle over Can Ricard and over preserving what was here, which includes not just the architectural heritage, but also these relationships between the small scale factories, the small businesses, and the artists, the cultural workers, the set designers, the different people who are working here, producing culture. So I mean, like, that's how sort of like the struggle over Can Ricard was actually very split at the beginning. Some people were just reclaiming that the buildings be preserved. Other were reclaiming that their jobs be preserved, or their businesses, and other of their artist studios. And at that point, I think around the time when Confluence, which is this artist studio building, was taken over, is when these positions sort of like meshed together to talk about this this area that's like that's on one hand on like this sort of creative ecosystem that's unique, that doesn't exist anywhere else.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, even if it's changing, it could be a laboratory of sustainable urban development, creative use of technology based on the past, and also, you know, taking into account the present, yeah, yeah, you know, technologies, the future, all the stuff that they are supposedly claiming that they're doing, yeah, in Pueblo Nuevo, which they're really not.
And the, what are their actual proposals for Can Ricard?
Can Ricard is now after the struggle, they've decided to preserve a couple of the buildings, but they're basically they're going to tear most of it down and turn it into apartments and office buildings. That's and they're basically going to do with it whatever they're doing with the rest of Pueblo Nuevo.
Yeah.
If you walk around Pueblo Nuevo, you see a lot of construction, a lot of like high rises going up, and all of those were whatever factories. I don't know, housing for working class people,
yeah,
back in the days.
And can you speak a little bit about like the, as these if this proposal goes ahead further, or well, first of all, actually, how old is this 22 Europa project?
I'm not really sure. Ever since I've been here, which is 6 years, I've been hearing about it.
Okay.
So
okay, so it's been it's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but if it goes ahead as we see it's already, it's like it is firing ahead, the amount of construction sites around, the amount of towers going up, half built, some fully built, like the penis shape over there.
Right.
But if you look at other places that get this this form of urban takeover, like we see that a lot of them, maybe like if you go down Forum now, there's such bland places. They're not places for people to be. They're dangerous because if you go through them, there's no one around.
Yeah.
You look at other cities where they've tried this, and it's you know, it shows that it's not working. Whereas what the people here are proposing, what Macabre had until 2 weeks ago, what it has now, if the police allowed people to come in, is zones for people to be, to create, to experiment, to play, like really healthy spaces. Whereas these new zones are going to lack those, and with that, they're just this bland architecture and bland life that's
yeah.
dead. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Word up. I think in that terms, maybe that can be like I can use that to talk about something else, because I think people who are involved in cultural production can actually like make a choice here in terms of like say architects or artists can actually make a choice in collaborating with the construction of legitimacy for these projects, or they can collaborate in the production of live spaces like the artists in Macabre are doing.
Yeah.
And of course, in some ways it's harder to do what the Macabre are doing, because you're like, you don't have institutional legitimacy. You have to work within spaces which are illegal, because within legitimate legal spaces, none of this is really allowed. Less and less of this is allowed. But on the other hand, I think there's in the forum of the cultures, you can see the architects who participated in the construction of this sort of monumental dead clean photogenic, supposedly, I don't even think they're so photogenic, but I mean supposedly claimed photogenic things are I think they're accomplices in the creation. I mean, like, that's where they're manufacturing, and this guy Jean Nouvel, I think he's accomplice in what's happening in Pueblo Nuevo, because he collaborated and he could have come here and proposed something really collaborative. He could have used his clout. He probably wouldn't have gotten the job if he did.
Yeah,
but I mean, he could have used his clout to propose something that can really maintain the neighborhood in some ways as it was and transform it for the better, drawing on the life that was here.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously he preferred doing something completely unsustainable socially and ecologically, you know, just like a huge glass lit up structure that creates a spectacle for the city, creates this the skyline for the city, which is part of their brand that they're trying to construct, like a particular skyline, monumental, strange architecture that can draw people, supposedly tourists, people from wealthy countries who might be interested in coming here and spending money. So, I mean, like, the people who are gaining money off of this, people who are gaining money off of construction, are promoting this kind of use of public space. And the artists and architects who are constructing them with their name, with their legitimacy, are accomplices. Yeah. And in that sense, that's why I was, when we talked about these people who did this installation here a few months ago, I was very angry at them. This is the
Exist Collective that did a space station project.
Yeah, the Exist Collective created this scaffolding with like a huge back projection with 3D animation and like a whole light show here, sponsored by Bentidosarroba 22 at as part of like a festival that they organized, an art festival to promote exactly that Poblenou 22 ad Bentidosarroba as this new sort of artistic technological neighborhood, and the kind of work they presented was didn't engage the local population at all in any way. It was just, I don't know, I don't even want to go into art criticism. I mean, like, it just looked to me, the only thing it communicated to me was like how expensive it was, you know, and to me it was very rude to like go and do this bombastic, expensive looking 3D animation projected on a scaffolding in a neighborhood that's where people are getting kicked out of their home. And I think people who are doing this kind of work should really take responsibility of what they're doing. And when they go into a neighborhood, you always have to go and find out who's there and what are the processes that are going on, because if not, you're going to be instrumentalized to promote things that maybe you're not you don't agree with. I hope that the people from this collective would never do something similar in their own city, knowing the context and the situation.
Do you think with that, like, because I think with all this, the important thing is knowing what the reality is. But I wonder, like, groups like Exist, were they aware of the dynamics that were going on, or did they just hear that it was a chance to come and do a nice, fun project without any understanding or any wish to try to understand or try to help the situation, you know, to have a sense of what it's about. I wonder, did they have? I don't know.
Yeah. No, I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure they had no idea. Like, the kind of project that they did just, like, really communicated a lot of cluelessness about what's going on in this neighborhood and in this city.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's typical. I mean, it's really easy to fall into when you go to a different city and you do a project. That's why I think you have to be really, really careful and really responsible about this thing. But I think, I don't know, I would hope that most groups that are involved in projects that are resisting gentrification in their own neighborhoods would know to be cautious and watch out and do their research and try and talk to people when they go to a new space. I mean, that should be, I think that's part and parcel of any sort of like art practice that you are doing in a city that where you don't, in the context that you don't know. I mean,
and it's interesting then, because that collective now were invited to participate in the Architecture Biennale, which is just ended last month by France. France invited Patrick Bouchon to be the chef of the project, and he invited Exist to come and build another scaffolding system. And again, like, there was a fair amount of money thrown in, but but yet the whole project was about people living together, and official media took it that it was like a squat, but in its manifesto it talked about revolution, it talked about people trying to build a world that is far the outside of the stranger in this time of war and fear. But at the end, though, it talked about the fact that occupation of a palace, as it called itself, was a reality there, but it was also a reality outside, that there were other places that were occupying palaces, are building their own realities, are building their own spaces. So it's quite ironic that if they're tied in with that project, that exhibition piece, which is using the language of squats and resistance and autonomy, that they were so maybe unfeeling about, you know?
I think that's another thing you should be really careful about is discourse, because the forum is talked about peace, sustainability, and multiculturalism. It was really about war, gentrification, and pollution, you know? And they contacted Vandana Shiva and Noam Chomsky and invited all these people. They were like really serious about constructing these things. And they contacted groups from Palestine, and some of these people did come and some of these people didn't come. But like, I mean, I think you can talk about squatting and autonomy while actually generating gentrification and exploitation. So you should be really careful if you're not just like reappropriating language and doing the opposite.
Because
I mean, like, the biennial in Venice was not a squat. It was not a pirated project. It was not an act of civil disobedience. They were not risking themselves in any way. They were not being illegitimate in any way. They were actually working within complete legitimacy, reappropriating a certain language to make themselves look dangerous. You know, to have this sort of like dangerous cutting edge. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that sells jeans that are manufactured in China now. So I mean, there's a difference between Diesel and like and the Squats Free Store, even though the clothes look the same.
Yeah, but just like from my understanding, just having been there just for a little bit, it was like I know that the man Patrick Bouchard, I'm not fully sure of all of what he's done, but the little bit I've seen, he's done some amazing things which have been very outside the box, very, you know, working with groups that were left on the outside and working with them. So he was invited by the French government to run the project, and he said no, asked again, he says okay, but I make my rules. And then he says, they said, what, you make the rules? He said yes, or else I don't take it. So he did, and I'm not sure, but I think he's trying something difficult, which is gently trying to bring things into the discussion, into the architectural discussion, that haven't been happening previous. So he said, I will invite people to live in this space, I'll change this space, and we will just see what happens. So by that, like, for example, inviting an old, like Lucien Kroll, an old anarchist architect who came for a week, invited his friends to talk about bottom-up approach to planning, about real participative architecture. Not many people knew about that, and not too many people came and listened to this discussion, but it's still happening there. So he also invited the Exist Collective to come and build, and I'm not sure if it was there or his or whatever, the idea of playing with the idea of pirates and stuff like that. But I'm not sure, but maybe it's the start of something crucial, which is a more critical discussion happening within the architecture world, because I know from my experience of it, there's a serious lack of critical discussion in architecture worlds.
But at the same time, I think Barcelona actually is an amazing model for this, not in terms of architecture so much, but in terms of the art world. Yeah. The art world in Barcelona has really managed to reappropriate like a very critical political discourse while still generating gentrification, exploitation, all the bad stuff that's happening in Barcelona, this sort of tourist, unsustainable business model built on tourism, generating precarious jobs. So I mean, and doing this, talking about precarity, about gentrification, you know what I mean? So I mean, I think really people really need to be called on it, because if not, it could be the beginning of the reappropriation of a discourse where people of power think that they're actually being politically correct or whatever, while actually really doing more of the same or even worse. And like creating a situation where people have no idea what real political action looks like or feels like, because they're just like sort of like there's these mediators that take just some aspects of this, the aesthetic or the discourse, they communicate it to these people who have power, which is this dominant discourse, and then they can have like a talk about it without really anything happening. The MACBA, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Barcelona, they hold days of discussion and lectures about precarious working conditions while hiring the employees from temp agencies, paying them €3 an hour, having transformed the neighborhood de Raval into a completely clean, gentrified neighborhood from what it was before. So I mean, I think the mechanisms are so sophisticated for capturing ideas and capturing aesthetics that if it's not really connected to certain concrete material practices, and it really people need to be called on it. That's why I mean, like, the Exist Collective needs to be called on what they did here in Barcelona, and I think they need to be called on what it seems like they were doing in Vienna, using this sort of piracy discourse in an institutional context, gaining cultural capital, you know, to be then later on invited to more fancy places and talk as if they're doing what the Macabre is doing here today. I want to see the Macabre being invited to the Vienna Biennale and actually like creating a problem for the Biennial, you know, because like when an institution like the Biennial really takes on doing political action, it puts its basic conceptions into a contradiction, because it contradicts the way that it's funded, the way that it's sponsored, the real goals of this kind of event. So I mean, if this conflict is not generated, you know, I think I usually take these things on a case-to-case basis. I can't tell you that always a conflict has to be generated, but I think usually it would.
I think we better wrap up. A sound system is just coming past us to come down a candlelit highway through this occupied factory. Such is the life of these Macabre, which is fucking brilliant. Very good. But just to finish, like, perhaps there is, because things are so critical, they do need to get, as you say, called, but more so, like maybe the Biennale needs to get seriously taken on. Maybe the art world, architecture world needs to get seriously taken on. As opposed to just, you know, gently asking or you know, like, being gentle isn't working.
Yeah, I think so, and I think if there are architects and artists that are like sincere and honest about taking this on, they just have to be aware about the consequences of this and like how hard it is, you know, and that it means the dismantling of a lot of the most basic concepts of cultural production. Like Jean Nouvel can't go on holding on to his ego and like actually claiming that he's doing participatory socially transformative projects. He would really have to like step down from protagonism, and like, you know, he would have to pay like a huge price. He would not be able to function the way he functions now in terms of like his clout, you know, the money he makes. I mean, I think it would be very difficult for him to do that. Maybe those are the consequences. I mean, it's still, a lot of it is still to be explored, but there are artists and architects who are doing it. I mean, I don't think they're necessarily the ones who are being invited to these events.
Yeah, but maybe it's time, like, maybe those events might get hijacked, or like since looking like, say, theatre and theatre festivals, where, you know, the official ones will work, and then you get fringe on the side of it,
right,
where people who are really, you know, who aren't being invited to come, or to do, they just gone and doing it. And,
right,
and like, you look at Edinburgh, for example, and it's, you know, it can subvert, I suppose, the official system that's there.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm just sort of giving a hard time, because I think people who want to do this sort of thing, I think it's amazing and it's interesting. I mean, but I think people have to be giving themselves a hard time all the time to really ask themselves, is this effective? Is this transformative?
Yeah, yeah.
Is this social? Is this public? Is this just, you know, me enhancing my ego or my clout? Or, you know, is this, how does this play within the context of the market system of architecture, art, culture? You have to be asking yourself this constantly, and every time you do something, you have to ask what the consequences are, and what.
Okay, we better run. There's all sorts of stuff going on, and we're running down to the gates, but it could be meeting the police. So hasta luego.